Hi, I'm Chris Plum, head coach and CEO of Carmel Swim Club. This is the Off the Deck podcast. Off the Deck Champions, Carmel Swim Club's mission, teaching excellence through swimming for life. Carmel Swim Academy will provide an entry point for more children in central Indiana to have access to life-saving programs. It's true. Drowning is the leading cause of injury-related death in children ages 1 to 4, the second leading cause of death in children 5 to 9. But there is hope. Participation in formal swimming lessons can mitigate the risk of drowning by 88%. We are compelled to use our expertise in swimming to make our community safer and to ensure every child has the opportunity to learn to swim. To learn more, visit www.carmelswimacademy.org. Gain Swimming also sponsors the Off the Deck podcast. Gain Swimming is the gold standard in dry land training. We will have our annual clinic in Carmel coming up September 10th to the 12th. To learn more, visit www.thegainnetwork.com/gainswimming. Today's guest is head coach and CEO of the Sarasota Sharks, Mr. Brent Arkey. He's been with the Sharks since 2010. He worked his way up from the beginning, starting with a novice coach, loves coaching athletes. He originally swam for the Gators, and he also was a coach there at the University of Florida as a volunteer, and he helped build the Gator Swim Club, and he was there when they won the 2010 championship. Most recently, though, he has coached a silver medalist in the 2020, I guess we're calling it the 2020 games. He got to go to the camp and coach the one and only Emma Wyatt to a silver medal in the 400 IM. So, Brent, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for having me, Chris. I appreciate it.
Yeah, excited to have you on, especially with your recent success. I see you got your Olympic polo shirt on, yeah. Looking sharp.
Wear it for as long as I can.
Yeah, you got to live that up. So why don't we just start right away? I mean, all this success has had, I'm sure you had to put an obscene amount of work in. I know I have and other coaches have, but let's talk about your story, particularly with Emma. But how long have you coached Emma? Did you start with her as an age grouper? Because I know you've been there a while.
Yeah, so I've been with the Sharks since 2010. My main role when I was first hired was working with kind of our pre-senior group, the 13, 14, middle school, that kind of deal. And then I was Steve Brown's assistant. So I was very lucky, been fortunate that a lot of these kids I've been working with for quite some time. Emma was probably one of the first people that I did not coach in the middle school group as I became the head coach. Andrew Eckhart was really instrumental. He's my head age group coach, been really instrumental in her development. I really started working with her about 13, really 14, turning 14 as she was moving. As we started to see that she was something pretty special, we started to kind of segue her into the top group when she was coming out of middle school. So since she was about 13 or 14 years old, I've had something to do with her training.
Yeah. So, let's talk about the evolution. She, 400 IM, one of the most grueling events. I think as coaches, we love coaching that event because it takes everything. You got to have the technique. You got to have the endurance. You've got to be willing to train all four strokes. How did you help her evolve into this world-class athlete? And was there a long-term plan? Like, what was that like, say, 4 or 5 years ago?
I've had people ask me this question, and I think I'm getting better at answering it now that I've had to actually evaluate it. A lot of it happened organically, but we also have the mentality here that we want athletes to be as well-rounded, especially when they're young, as possible. And because you just never know what they're going to end up being, right? So I think it helps them from, staying interested in training, staying interested in, or having the mindset of kind of that growth mindset, right? So if you're always trying to find something else to work on, I think you're just teaching them to have that growth mindset. I think that's probably why a lot of us kind of gear ourselves towards IM, maybe we don't even realize it. You know, as I, again, as I've answered these questions, I realize how formative it is and important it is to have that mentality of always trying to find something new to get better at. And that was probably Emma's greatest gift. Andrew will tell you a story when she was 12. She could kick backstroke faster than she could swim backstroke. And he's given her a hard time about it. You know, hey, you're a great kicker, but if you ever really want to do this IM thing, your backstroke's going to have to get better. So there's a perfect example. We kind of, as a staff, we realized that this young lady really had the drive and the desire to be good. And then we just started having conversations. All right, Emma, what do you want to be? She was traditionally a kind of a middle to upper distance freestyler who swam real good breaststroke, good feet, not necessarily spectacular and fly and back. I mean, there were times when she was negative splitting 400s and 200 IMs when she was young. So Andrew was one of the first people to go, hey, we got to work on your backstroke. And that was a 2 or 3 year process. I don't want there to be, that was like some linear process. I would say that we lost her breaststroke in there a little for a few years, not a few years, probably a year or so. One, where she was growing and maybe we were putting a lot more emphasis on fly and back. The process was always trying to get her better at all four strokes, but also kind of working around the framework of her growth and where she was as an athlete. When we started going to these pro series meets and we're trying to swim our way out of a hole, from the first half of a 400 IM, those started to be some really good conversations about, all right, how do we get stronger up front? How do we get more efficient up front? So, her baseline was middle to upper distance free with breaststroke, with a breaststroke proficiency, and then we started adding pieces to that as she got older.
It almost sounds like you guys started with freestyle, and then she had the breaststroke, and then you were like working backwards to the back and fly almost.
And I think a lot of that, and I'm sure we'll get into it today, was the dry land. The dry land had a big effect on the front end and the ability to do butterfly efficiently. And that, again, Emma was a late bloomer. She didn't grow quite as early as a lot of young ladies. So again, being patient, I guess that's probably another big piece, is don't be in such a hurry to have this junior national, senior national level athlete. Hey, if they're fast young, that's awesome. But our goal is still to continue to get them better. And being a little patient sometimes, I think, is the key. And we definitely had to be with Emma. And I know you and I have spoken about it before, certainly the kicking aspect is something that starts young in our program and is important all the way through. And certainly you can see that on the end of her races, her ability to close, I think, is driven by the feet as well.
Well, yeah. So if we talk about the dry land component of this, you're working closely with the godfather of the dry land, Mr. Vern Gambetta. He's right there in your backyard. I know he comes around quite often. What, this transformation that you guys had, I remember first started working with Steve in the dry land program, and he was like, what is this? to where now it's like you guys have totally bought in and you're doing the gained stuff and you're taking it with you all the meets. So
yes, certainly. Certainly there was the cornerstone of our program is hard work, and it always has been. And I think that one of Steve's gifts was he was open to other people bringing other ideas to the program. I was coming from Gainesville when I came down to work for him, and I was kind of watching what the Gators were doing, what other people were doing from a dry land standpoint. I think I was at ASCA and I saw Vern speak, and we were talking. Steve and I were in a meeting, and I was like, Steve, this guy's in our backyard. We might as well at least reach out and see what it's all about. And that first day he came in, we ran through warm up, and, you know, it was mini band and, you know, a lunge and reach or a coordination or whatever it was. And then he was like, all right, let's go to work. And then everybody's like, oh crap, we still have to like do a workout after this. You know, so the big thing was taking that cornerstone of work that we have and then realizing that we can augment it and make it better by becoming better athletes. And that came in the form of a lot of different things. Injury prevention. I mean, we used to have a lane full of shoulders and knees, right? We don't have any of that, hardly ever anymore. Actually, Chris Webb and I were talking 2 days ago, and you know, he was asking me, well, how do you evaluate if it's successful or not? And, you know, I remember the first time realizing how great it could be was we disqualified a bunch of 200 medley relays at a high school state meet because everybody's going off the blocks and going past 15 meters. And we're like, oh man, everybody's so much better underwater, line wise. They're just better athletes. You know, so that's kind of how it started was, hey, we're doing all this work and we're pretty good in the distance stuff, but our middle distance and speed was lacking. And again, to Steve's credit, he was open to doing something different. And the first reaction is, hey, can I take away 2 hours of water time or 3 hours of water time and allot it to dry land? And we did it and we saw the results immediately. And in a lot of ways, we saw the ability to train go up even. So that was the beginning of it. And now we kind of went backwards maybe from what a lot of people do. We started at the top and then worked down the program. If I had to redo it again, I would have gone the other way. Or maybe simultaneously. Now we've got, you know, Andrew has really bought into it. He was with us when Vern first implemented it. And now he's kind of turned the age group program into all the threads of everything that you guys talk about all the time from a game standpoint. And he's kind of turned them into games. And we've got 10 and unders running down the pool deck, excited about getting to dry land. So it's kind of just evolved to, it's part of our program now, no differently than probably yours. It's just an expectation and people actually really love it, especially the young kids. They're enjoying playing little games where we're bouncing on one leg or we're crawling or we're, it's just been really good. And it's something that, we have certainly seen the progression, of help us in a real positive way.
Yeah, and I think what, you know, for those people out there who haven't been to your pool, I think people have to understand is like, oh, they might say we don't have space or we can't do it. When it comes to your place, you guys are doing it outside, right? All of your stuff's outside. So you've just got to figure out how to make it work. And you guys have slowly evolved into bigger space because you figured out how to use it. But you know, talk about the space and being outside in the sun and like making all that work, because that's got to be a challenge, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, we had the conversation yesterday. It feels like 110 outside right now. So you certainly have to be careful with all of that. So the evolution of the space was, hey, as I sit here and talk about it, I can laugh about it now, but we used to throw, I can't tell you how many hundreds of pounds into a shopping cart, push it across the street. So we had like a little room. And I remember the shopping cart collapsing and me and Steve just being like, what are we going to, we've got 300 pounds of dumbbells laying on the ground. Right. So we just did what we had to do in order to find space. That space kind of disappeared at one point, for various reasons. And so we were kind of like, well, one, the transition time from going across the street to the pool, we felt like, hey, we're losing an hour to an hour and a half of every 10, 15 minutes that it takes us to get across the street. So we're like, hey, how can we, let's think outside the box. And then all of a sudden it was, hey, let's spend $800 or $1,000 on a rig, like a pull-up rig. And that was originally, you've been to the pool in the back corner where like the lane lines are, and it was on the pool deck. It was literally on the pool deck. So we started just hanging rings and doing pull-ups outside, and we've kind of learned to embrace a little bit of the rust. It's kind of a nice, you know, a nice thing, a little gritty, and we kind of like that. But certainly, you know, we're outside. People always tell me, oh, well, you're in Florida. You know, you get to be outside. I'm like, yeah, we're outside when it feels like 110. We're outside when it feels like 25. During the real hot periods and maybe high intensity in the water, we end up doing the dry land in the morning when it's, you know, still in the high 70s. And during the winter, we do it in the afternoon when it's probably, you know, in the high 70s. So, you know, there's extremes in there, but we just try to stay away from them. You know, currently right now, the other piece is instead of going big blocks, you know, 45 minutes to an hour, we've kind of cut these down to about 30-minute blocks, and we do them right now. We're going six times a week, kind of cycling through a total body day, an upper body day, and a core day. And that's just so they aren't just sweating everything out. And then we're not on a full load of training yet. So we just have had to try to figure out time of year, weekly cycles from swimming. And again, I'm talking to you guys. I'm always you guys being like you and Chris Webb and Vern and Ian Murray, just trying to figure out how the swimming cycles and the dry land cycles kind of how they marry. And that's been the big project right now. We kind of have an idea of what we do to manage the elements and manage the gear. And now we've got a little bit, it's like an old splash pad that we've turned into a couple of rigs and med balls and mini bands all hanging out there. We even have pulleys out there. So, I mean, really, we've got just about what anybody could ever need, minus a handful of things. You have to have a line item in your budget to replace some stuff every year, but it's a small price to pay. So we made it work.
Yeah. And I mean, just to roll clear too, I mean, you basically need med balls, dumbbells, rings,
yeah,
and some mini bands. Right. I mean, it's just not complicated. It's not like, hey, I need a 20 hex bars, 20 glued hand machines. Like it's just, that's not the point. I think Vern always talks about a weight room without walls and, you know, just figuring out what to do with your space, you know. And let's kind of go back a little bit to the Olympics and that trend that, you know, there's that, I don't know, 5 or 6 week period between the Olympic trials, which, and then the Olympic Games, and Emma has to, you know, she continued to work through that. I'm sure you provided dry land stuff. So what were, and then on a bigger scale too, like maybe, I know you went to Hawaii, what was that camp like for her and then everybody else? Just give us an insight to that experience.
Sure. Well, so the 5 to 6 weeks, right or wrong, I'll probably need to continue to digest it. We chose to, you know, she made the team the first night of Olympic trials, and there's a lot of emotion that comes along with that. And I think you've got to embrace all that and lean into all that stuff. We weren't great the next morning. She was up till 3 o'clock in the morning and then turns around, tries to swim a 400 free. And, you know, those are the things that we had. I don't want anybody to feel like it was just, you know, some easy process. We were still evaluating once we were at the swim meet. So you make the team, and then we kind of learn some things in the next 36 hours. And we chose to take advantage of being there and went back to work almost, you know, day four of the swim meet. And I think that helped a little bit. And not when I say back to work, it's just kind of getting back to, I think we went off a number that was about 80-85% of max intensity and volume. But that just gave us 4 or 5 days to kind of get back into the swing of things. And then, you know, you had a week at home, which I think is nice. You can kind of do all the media things that you need to do. And you can be at home eating your food at home and sleeping in your bed. You can kind of control the environment a little bit better. Kind of sit down and have a conversation about resetting goals, and we've got a job to do here in the next few weeks. So I felt like those two things were really beneficial up front. And then, you know, again, I think one of the greatest things about the dry land that we do, we were able to do it wherever we needed to do it once we got to Hawaii. And I think that it was so general feelings of Hawaii. I'm sure that in years past, it would look very different. We had some challenges because we were at three different facilities. The dry land or the weight room was at one facility. So to get there was another 45 minutes of your day. And so I felt like anybody that we could get into the dry land room and get their dry land done, even if it was on a pool deck, that saved them an hour and a half where they could be at home relaxing, getting ready for the next training day. So I'm sure, you know, I don't have anything to base it on, but I would imagine that this was very challenging being at three different facilities, some days splitting men and women, some days splitting by group, by event. There was a lot of it was a big jigsaw puzzle all the time. I can't imagine what those head coaches were doing every night. They would take all the information from us and try to get everybody to the right place and then get the staff in line. It's quite a production, and it's a really interesting team environment trying to get everybody what they need. Certainly it is awesome to watch the best of the best all get together. And that's the beauty of the United States camp, I think. Certainly you learn that there's a lot more out there. There's a lot of people working just as hard as you. And I think for people like Emma or Jake, maybe, you know, they get in there and realize that, hey man, I belong here, right? Like, this wasn't an accident a couple of weeks ago. I can get in here and I can train with the rest of these guys, these big name guys, I can train with them. And I think there's an automatic, confidence builder in there. And that's probably what I saw the most of, especially from the young ones, is, you know, at first they're kind of trying to figure out where their spot is. And, then all of a sudden it starts to click that man, I'm on the Olympic team, man. This is going to be awesome. I'm starting to get some questions on this. You know, what are my big feelings? I certainly feel like there's kind of three groups. This might be an oversimplification, but there's kind of three groups in the camp. There are some really talented athletes in there. They're just some specimens, right? We've all seen them. There's also a group of people that worked really, really hard to get there. They've got above average talent, but they also have above average training ability, above average desire to train. You can work yourself onto an Olympic team. I really, truly believe that if you're willing to, you can find ways to get there. And especially with good coaching relationships, I think I'll kind of segue into that. Then the third one is you've got some superstar talent and superstar work ethic, and those people are really, really special. Those are the ones that are making money in swimming. Those are the ones that are coming back next year. Those are the ones that are doing it over and over and over again. I think it was great for me as a club coach to see that you can work. I think there's this idea that it's all just talent that gets you there, and that couldn't be further from the truth. Those guys are working hard. And then I think the third big thing for me was long ago, Martin Wilby started talking to me about what my cookie recipe was going to be, right? What's your cookie recipe? What's that look like? There are certainly a lot of ways to bake chocolate chip cookies, and everybody's doing it slightly different, but everybody has the same ingredients. Everybody has their own amount that they're using. They might use different chocolate chips. They might do a little bit more this, a little bit more that, but everybody's got the same pieces to the puzzle. And that's where I think the United States does such a nice job of trying to figure out how to get everybody what they need. The biggest things for the athletes are being self-sufficient. We always talk about that, but if they don't know how to advocate for themselves, I think we're selling them short, because some of them are way smarter than we are. We all think that we're, this smartest thing on the planet, but I think I heard Bill Sweetnam say, athletes or coaches can see things that athletes can't, and athletes can feel things that coaches can't. So if you don't have that relationship, it's very difficult. I think athlete coach relationship is kind of, I've doubled down on that over the last few years. So that was a real long answer, but
I love the insight. You know, for us who wasn't, you know, I was coaching Jake through Jake and Anthony Nesty. So, and talking to Jake, you know, he doesn't give you a whole lot. So, you know, I love to hear what's going on there. But yeah, the young guns, I know, had to be a huge confidence boost. What, you know, as you kind of step away and, like you said, digest, what did you take away or what did you learn from those coaches on that trip?
There's a lot of different personalities on that trip, right? They run everywhere from, you know, new coaches to guys that have been there multiple times. I was surprised by, maybe surprise is the wrong word. I was encouraged by, I hate to come back to it, but the feedback and the interactions between some of these older athletes and their coaches, I really felt encouraged about the way that I'm trying to handle myself as I've evolved as a coach. Certainly I was a young coach that was trying to, you know, just cram everything down everybody's throat at one point. And you can get to a certain level that way. But it's not that enjoyable that way. And I don't think that you're going to get people to peak performance that way. And I was really encouraged to see how all of these guys interacted with these high performance athletes. And I was also really, really amazed that these high performance athletes are craving information. I mean, I was the youngest guy on the staff, right? I'm for sure the most inexperienced coach out of that crew. And there are, you know, all kinds of guys that have been in their second or third Olympic games. They're like, hey, you know, would you mind looking at this? What do you think here? Or just wanting to have a conversation. And I think we just have, as club coaches, we've got to continue to teach that that thirst for knowledge, because I think that's what makes really good ones even better.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, from coaching Jake and Drew, you know, Drew especially, he is a student of the sport and asking questions all the time, right? And like, there's information there, and I like the fact that you said advocate for yourself, because, you know, you're on that trip, you're going to be great because you are invested and have ownership in your own swimming. And you recognize that and understand that. You know, let's kind of switch directions to, you know, you took over as your head coach, but when did you officially become CEO, and what has that been like for you? I know you and I talk about it before, but where are you at with that today?
So it's been an awesome learning experience. I've been very fortunate in my career to kind of be, I mean, I've worked very hard, but I've also been in the right place at the right time to have some opportunities. And sometimes they've been pretty scary. And I'm glad I've got a wife that supports, you know, kind of taking some risks and all of that. So really, the long story short was, the why was looking to do some changes. I took over in 2014, and the why was looking to do some changes. They didn't really want to run the facility quite as much anymore, and didn't feel like the swim team was financially where they wanted it. And so we were looking at, you know, some sort of agreement where a third party would run the swim team and kind of take over the operations of the facility. And that was all well and fine. We were kind of talking through that, what that would look like. And then kind of in the 11th hour, the plug got pulled on that. And actually, I've never been on something like this and told this story, but it was, you know, they basically had said, hey, we're closing the facility and we're shutting the team down. And I felt pretty strongly that, on my watch, the 60-year tradition of the Sarasota Sharks couldn't go down. So I at least had to try, right? Maybe I'm not ready to be the CEO. Maybe I'm not ready to run a business. Maybe I'm not, but maybe I am, right? So, hey, we had to try. So we created a nonprofit, 501c3, that runs the facility and runs the swim team. And I took over as the CEO. And in its infancy, we weren't sure we were going to make it 2 or 3 years. And I think they normally say, you know, startup companies, they either make it or break it within the first three. So the end of three was the pandemic. And so we're scrambling even more. And the big thing has been, we've got awesome support. There's a lot of tradition here. I've definitely been the benefactor of 60 years of everybody else's hard work. There've been a lot of really good coaches that have come through here. Emma's our fourth Olympian to come through here. So, you know, I don't want it to sound like, you know, I would like to think that I've made this place a little bit better and given it an opportunity, but I certainly have been a benefactor of tradition. You know, as far as the CEO role goes, when I first started all that, I mean, we were a YMCA, so you had all the infrastructure of a YMCA, people fundraising for you, people doing your payroll for you, all that kind of thing. And I took over all of that. I mean, I was running payroll. Every email was coming through me, any day-to-day operational thing you could think of. It was me and a couple of guys trying to run the facility, keep the pool clean, make sure it's, make sure that everything's safe. We were doing everything. Eric Nelson was in there for a little while, helping us as the, he was the assistant and the aquatics director. I'm sure he wasn't planning on doing that when I hired him. So we had a lot of people that just really, really worked hard to try to make this work. And especially those first 3 years when we didn't really know what was going to happen and how it was going to look. Today, what does that look like? I've got a full-time business manager, an office manager, an aquatics director. We have 4 full-time coaches. So we've got a full staff now, and I'm finally able to get back to a little more coaching and more oversight and kind of overall vision and direction of the program instead of just being in the day-to-day. But in a weird sort of way, I think I had to do all of that so I knew what all the ins and outs of the business were. So as much work as it was, thank God it was early on my kid, when my kids were born. It's definitely been, my goal recently has been, all right, let's start figuring out what my role really is and what kind of help I can get. And I'm not afraid to try to pay people to help this program continue to move forward. So it's been a real evolution and a lot of fun learning how to run a business. And I just thank everybody who supported us along the way. I think probably the big hurdle was 2 years in, we had to replace a liner on the pool. And that was $400,000 that we had to try to find a way to fundraise. And again, you're talking about years and years and years of tradition and support. So can't thank those guys enough.
So. Yeah. I mean, I just love that you just had a resolve about, no, we're keeping this going. And I think you got to have that to be successful. Talking about, you got 2 kids. Are they in the water yet? You got them swimming?
My son can swim, I guess you would call it swimming. I actually really enjoy it. We try to go to the pool. We got a little pool in our neighborhood here. And we try to go every night just to tire him out anyway. He goes, and he's becoming pretty self-sufficient in the water. Our little one has been, swimming's been a part of my life. I've been swimming in Florida since I was 6 years old. So, it's just what you got to do if you live in Florida. Really, if you live anywhere, but certainly in a place like Florida where there's water everywhere, you got to know how to swim. So he's running around trying to race people across the pool, all that kind of stuff. It's mostly kicking right now, which is fine by me. Try not to make it too structured, as long as he's fun, having fun, diving to the bottom of the pool. Our little one is – had some motor skill, like gross motor skill. I don't know if it's considered delays, but it's some stuff that we've had to do PT on. And the water's been kind of a gift to her, to be quite honest. You know, learning to, and I'm probably one of those who's got just enough knowledge to be dangerous, right? So I think that I know what I'm talking about because I run dry land programs and I run swim teams and lessons programs and all that. But her learning to move her body in the pool has been really beneficial to her, learning to balance, learning to engage different muscles. And so she's finally getting to the point, she's three, she's getting to the point where she's floating on her back and starting to kick. When you're talking about somebody who didn't walk until after 2 years old. So, you know, water's awesome, man. Water for a myriad of reasons, water's awesome.
Right. Yeah, no, it is a special place. I think for all of us who are involved in aquatics, just it's home, right? Like even getting in the water today, you just feel at home.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, a couple questions here I want to ask. What have you had to learn the hard way, Brent?
What have I had to learn the hard way? I don't know. I feel like most things I've had to learn the hard way. Right. I'm a pretty stubborn human being. I'm sure my parents and my wife and, I've had to learn that don't sweat the small stuff. That's probably the biggest thing. I spent a lot of time worried about everything all the time. Wasn't healthy for me physically or mentally. I talk a lot about like trying to find what true north is. I'm not sure I always know what that is, but I try to block out some of the noise sometimes. That's definitely something I've had to learn the hard way. Not everything is worth getting all upset about. I think having a family helps when you do that. I think when I was young, it was every email was you know, a mountain. Every meeting was a mountain. Every swim was a mountain. I think that, I'm not the world's most outgoing person. These meetings with friends and that kind of thing have been good for me. Learning to talk, learning to communicate. I'm not really good at talking about myself or my program. If you're going to be a CEO and you're going to be the head of a program, you kind of got to learn to do that, or you better have somebody doing it for you. So that's certainly something I've learned the hard way. But I would tell you that most things in life I've had to do the hard way. But I think it also makes it so, you talked about when I do have a goal or I have a desire, you know, I'm pretty passionate about it for better or for worse. So, I think it's taught me to be a little resilient, but my swimming career was strange, and but I think it got me back to coaching for that reason. So I don't look back on things as like, hey, I would have done it differently. I just appreciate for where it's got me now. But I would say that I like to bang my head against the wall unnecessarily sometimes.
All right. Hey, we're going to finish with some faster questions now.
All right.
So anybody in history, who would you like to do a social kick with?
Social kick. John Adams.
Oh, okay. What song would you least like to pop up during a practice?
The YMCA.
good answer. What were three songs on your pre-race playlist?
Man, that's a long time ago. I'm sure it was a couple of songs off of Metallica's Kill 'Em All. Back then, Incubus off of either the Science album or what was the album right after that? And then probably one of the Beastie Boy albums back then. I would say probably like Paul's Boutique or something like that.
A little bit of hard rock and some rap in there. I love it. If you could post a billboard at the pool for everyone to read, what would it say?
You know, I should know the author's name. I'm on the Four Agreements kick right now. I think mm-hmm. I would have that. And actually, I put it on the practice right now. I'm trying really hard to live by those Four Agreements. So I think I would like to share that with everybody else.
Great. Are you swimming in the deep end or shallow end?
Shallow, I guess.
Okay. Long warm up or short warm up?
Does warm up to swim count?
Sure.
Short then.
Okay. Are you early to the block or last to the blocks?
Early. I'm an early guy.
What is your perfect dime order?
Ooh, like me personally or like to a watcher?
You personally.
I think I'm actually okay with how it is. Okay. I would be all right with how it is.
Kickboard or no kickboard?
Kickboard. I'm still old school on that, I guess.
Yeah, all right. Would you rather be in a pool that's too cold or too warm?
Too cold.
Lane leader or caboose?
Lane leader.
Good answer as head coach and CEO. And lastly, what is your favorite Gatorade or Powerade color?
Orange Gatorade.
Orange. Classic. You went classic. Okay. Brent, this has been fun. I appreciate it. Anything else you would like to for the people to know? Or what's going on?
Just plugging along, man. Trying to set this thing up for the next 3 years instead of four, I guess. So.
I know. I keep telling everyone else, we've got to get the quad. It's, what do we call it?
I guess the tri plan.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Brent. Appreciate it. Best of luck to you this season.
Thank you.